In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police, who investigate crime, and the Crown prosecutors, who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Caption: Seven Dials, London, 29th September. Two guys walk along a street.
Those were his exact words. Yeah, I would have thought, what are we doing with someone who objectifies people to the point where they're just numbers? Besides which, I'm an 8 and a half. Ask anyone.
Yeah, maybe an 8 when I had the parade, but I never made that mistake ever yet.
What, and he thinks he's a nut?
I know! With those chicken legs. You know, from now on, I'm just going to concentrate on me. I need to take some time out to think about what I really want.
Good for you.
OK, ciao, Bella.
See you later.
Carrying takeaway coffees, one of the guys heads across the road. He descends a staircase to a basement. In a window is a sign, Retrotopia.
Right, hungry people! Come and get it!
He sees a hand dripping with blood and drops the takeaways. A dead blonde woman's eyes stare. The guy runs out. Matt Devlin's with Ronnie Brooks in the street.
Three dead and one serious head injury. Joanne Ellis, one of the customers. She's in a pretty bad way.
Right, OK.
Matt waits.
What's this, age before beauty?
Something like that.
Inside, three bodies are photographed. Ronnie sees Joy Aykroyd.
Joy?
Take it you're here for the tour. Kelly Scott, one of the sales assistants. Only started yesterday. This one's a customer. Driving licence IDs are as Linda Bowers. Works in a cake shop nearby. That's the owner, Stephen Marks. Been trading just under a year.
Who found them then?
The other sales assistant, Paul Dean. Came back after his lunch break.
And got the fright of his life.
So what is this, some sort of glorified charity shop or what?
Vintage designer, apparently. Not your average tap.
Blimey, I'll say, look at that. 200 quid. Should flog some of me old threads.
You're looking for a masked man. May answer to the name of Zorro.
A sword?
You've got some really deep stab wounds, not to mention a lot of wild slashing and gashing. Shame the cameras are dummies. Must have been quite a show.
So, we're looking for a homicidal maniac wielding a sword in a public place.
What a nightmare.
Law & Order UK, starring Bradley Walsh as rugged DS Ronnie Brooks, Jamie Bamber as fresh-faced DS Matt Devlin, Harriet Walters as dark-haired DI Natalie Chandler. Ben Daniels as sharp-faced James Steele, Freema Agaman as glamorous Alicia Phillips, and Bill Patterson as balding George Castle. Caption: Royal Hampton Hospital, Wednesday, 19th September.
I was gone to meet a friend. I was only gone 30 minutes. 40 minutes max.
Has your boss been having any problems with anyone lately?
Stephen? Nah, don't think so. Maybe we had this couple in this morning, but...
What couple?
Italian. I thought they were tourists. The bloke got me on chain of the leather jackets for him. Stephen called the girl, put stuff in a bag, started shouting in Italian.
And then what happened?
Stephen said he was going to call the cops and they legged it.
OK. Have you got a description for us?
She was a sort of young Nancy Dell'Olio. And he was a turned-down Mika. I don't get it. Why would someone do this?
I don't know, son. I really don't.
The DI has called a press conference in half an hour asking for anyone who's in the area to come forward.
Oh, well, that's handy. Just a couple of thousand tourists and shoppers, then.
So how come we got no witnesses?
Precisely.
I mean, whoever it was has got to have been covered in blood, not to mention they were carrying a bloody great sword.
Matt, this city is full of people walking around with blinkers on nowadays. Covent Garden is also full of people standing around in gold paint, fire eating or juggling. So he might not have stood out that much.
And he's still out there somewhere.
Which is the really scary part.
Devlin, and you're a star.
Police observation room, Bow Street.
Gianni Petroni and Leah Rossi. Picked up outside Selfridges with around £6,000 worth of designer clothing.
And we're sure these are the same two?
Your witness ID'd them. Apparently Miss Rossi's dress is one she stole earlier.
But I'm not getting homicidal maniac, that's for sure.
No, me neither. But there's just a chance they saw something. Though up to now, they've not been very cooperative.
Oh, let's get in there, give them some encouragement.
Whatever it takes.
Ronnie raises an eyebrow.
Commissioner Callahan wants hourly updates, and once the media frenzy starts, our job's going to get even harder, so anything you can get out of these two, anything at all.
Yeah, we'll talk to them. Do we need an interpreter?
I doubt it. They're from Enfield.
I'm telling you, I didn't see anything, and I didn't hear anything.
But you admit you were in the shop. And you threatened Stephen Marks.
Threatened him? Shut up!
And less than 2 hours later, he was dead. Maybe you went back there. You thought that he could identify you from the CCTV tapes.
Tapes? What tapes? You knew. The cameras aren't even real.
Three people, Gianni, left lying in their own blood. One girl's head was nearly severed from her body.
Right, look, I know, OK? I told you we had nothing to do with that.
You know, if we'd been there half an hour later, that could have been us. You any idea what that feels like?
Must be terrifying. So I'm asking you again, where did you go after you left the shop?
I told you. I don't remember exactly.
Well, we know you ended up in Oxford Street. Did you go straight there?
I'm not sure.
Look, I don't care if you turned over half the shops in Covent Garden. I just want to know where you went.
Leah examines her long nails.
Hey, Leah, what about Gianni? Was he with you all the time?
Gianni's the last person you should be harassing.
Hmm. Who would you suggest?
How about the crackhead in the alley for a start?
What crackhead in the alley?
A total nutter. Kept banging his head against the wall.
So, what do we think?
About the convenient crackhead. It's about the only bit of the story they agree on. Let's get on to all the drop-ins and shelters with a description, and if these two can't pick them out of wards, then get them to do an e-fit and keep them apart, yeah? Strictly no conferring.
MIU Central Headquarters, Bow Street. Matt holds up two similar e-fits.
Well, they're not exactly twins, but they could be related.
They could also be half the homeless guys in London.
Can forensics narrow it down?
Apparently not, Gov. The prints were just a mass of smudges. But they have come up with a profile of the weapon. A single-edged blade, probably military. Comparisons were run. The closest comparison they do have is a US Army issue bayonet, circa 1950.
So, Chandler. Oh, great, thank you. Joanne Ellis has regained consciousness.
A woman lies in a hospital bed, a bandage wrapped around her head and her eye covered. Her consultant's with Ronnie and Matt.
Just give her some time.
Okay.
Blade ripped her scalp and dug a trench in her skull.
Joanne, when the woman screamed, where were you?
Trying on a dress. There was a woman on the floor. A man hit me.
The man, did you see his face?
Joanne nods. Matt looks at Ronnie.
And Joanne, sorry, sweetheart, I'm going to show you a picture, OK? If it looks like the man, just let us know, OK?
Joanne lowers her bruised eye to look at the e-fit and nods.
Yes.
In the street by Seven Dials.
All right. Anything?
Nah, more of the same. What's the word from uniform?
Still going door to door. Nothing definite to report. Just seems round here the homeless really are invisible.
So what do you reckon? Keep on going, meet up in Organic Beauty?
If we must.
In a shop, Matt sees Ronnie looking at a product.
You gonna buy that?
I wouldn't know whether to wear it or eat it, look.
Can I help?
Yes, actually, you can. We're looking for some information regarding the fatal incident in Brewer's Alley.
I said in the papers that it was completely random, that he could strike again at any time. Is that true?
Well, we're advising everyone to be cautious, yeah.
I'm sorry, would you happen to recognise this man? You might have seen him wandering around the area yesterday.
No, not yesterday, but the day before. He was standing right outside the door there. Just kept looking in. Thought he might be watching one of my customers.
Well, any customer in particular?
A pretty girl, blonde. She comes in quite a lot. Actually, she signed up for my mailing list. I teach yoga a couple of nights a week.
Oh.
Yep, Linda Bowers.
Matt looks at Ronnie, who's nodding slightly.
Is she one of them?
I'm afraid so, yeah.
Oh, poor girl.
So it wasn't random.
Doesn't look like it.
No, our mystery man was after Linda Bowers.
Yeah, that's the guy. Girl called us round 10-ish. Said some weirdo had followed her around from work.
What, from Neil Street to Southwark?
Yeah. By the time we got there, he was gone. But we did a drive-by a couple of hours later, and there's Charmy standing across the street walking in circles.
Any ID?
Afraid not. No wallet, no driving license, and he didn't want to give us his name.
You didn't bring him in?
It wasn't like we could charge him with anything. So we decided to relocate him.
Sorry?
You know, like what they do with bears. Drove him back across the river and dumped him. Thought at least that way he can do any harm.
Ronnie's open-mouthed.
Bears? Are you telling me he was picked up for harassing one of the victims and we still have no idea who he is?
It's like he doesn't exist. No name, no fixed boat, no nothing.
You do know that Callahan's pressuring me to release the EFIT to the media.
Well, you know what? That might not be such a bad idea.
How many homeless guys are there in woolly hats out there? We've been buried alive under reported sightings, not to mention the chances of the wrong bloke getting lynched.
All right.
Hello, Ronnie. Sorry, are we keeping you from your afternoon tea?
No, not at all. Sorry, Gov. I was thinking about the bayonet, right? I mean, he didn't have it on him, did he, when Nit and Wit took him for his ride across the river, so he must have got hold of it last week, right?
It's not the kind of thing you find in a skiff, either.
No.
No reports of any bayonets being stolen in the Greater London area.
What if we went to the dealers direct, see if any of them been carrying any unofficial 20th century items and let it go?
Yeah. Turns out Matty's got a secret stash of antique muskets.
Do you know? I can see that.
Yeah, that sounds right. Compatible with an M1 rifle, yeah? This was last week. Okay, thanks. You've been very helpful. Work comes up to Covent Garden first Monday of the month. Says he had a mint condition M1 bayonet nicked from his stall by some homeless wanker.
Our homeless wanker?
Right down to his woolly hat. Tried to buy it with some vouchers. And when that didn't work, he smashed the case and nicked it.
Vouchers?
Yeah, he reckons it was for some night shelter. He had a whole stack of them. Seemed to think it was a checkbook.
St. Celsus homeless shelter.
That very much resembles John.
And John wouldn't happen to have a last name, would he?
We only know him as John, though I believe some of the regulars call him Zero, as in Bravo to Zero.
From Zorro to Zero.
Do you mean he's ex-military?
No. John's more a one-man army. But he likes to wear the clothes, the boots, all that sort of thing. I'm sorry, what is this about?
Well, unfortunately, John is a suspect in a murder investigation.
John? That can't be right.
Well, has he been in recently?
No, not for a few days. The last time was Thursday, I think, for breakfast.
And do you know where he goes when he's not here?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. But are you certain this is the person you want?
Well, it's starting to look that way.
I'm very surprised by this. He doesn't use drugs and he's never violent. Sometimes he's a little confused, perhaps. But he struck me as an educated sort of man. Not dangerous in any way. Excuse me.
Thank you, Father.
Matt zips up a documents case.
So, sometimes he's a bit confused.
Yeah, when he's not banging his head against the wall. If he ain't a crackhead, he's a nutjob.
Campbell Street Medical Centre.
Yeah, I know him. Usually wears army fatigues. Name's John Smith.
You're kidding.
The name he gave us. Interesting guy. He recognised my tattoo. Kushta. Means truth in Aramaic. John always said it was the language of the common people.
So he was a regular, yeah?
He was. According to this, he hasn't picked up his prescription in nearly 3 months. That's not good.
What's he on?
Risperidone and carbamazepine. He's for schizophrenia. They tried him on the weekly injections, but he just kept missing the appointments.
What happens when he doesn't take them?
Delusions, psychosis, possibly full-blown mania.
Schizophrenics aren't necessarily violent, though, are they?
There's always the exception that proves the rule. Is John in trouble?
Afraid so. Do you have any idea where we might find him?
Most of these guys register using the clinic address.
So how do they pick up a prescription without an ID?
They have a badge with a temporary NHS number. Although John had his nicked a while back, so he just uses his Westminster library card.
He has a library card?
Yeah, a lot of them do. Some of them even read the books.
Soho Square Library. Friday, 1st October. A plump woman approaches Ronnie and Matt as they come in.
It's been an ancient history since we opened. Same as always. We thought trying to evacuate the building would arouse his suspicions.
No, you were quite right. You've had no problems with him in the past?
No, none. He just comes to read.
Right, lads, get people out as quickly and quietly as you can, OK? Whereabouts is he?
He's in the far corner.
Great, thank you.
Wearing stab vests, they go in the direction she's pointing. Matt taps Ronnie's arm and heads off. Serious-faced Ronnie slowly walks the length of a bookcase, then gestures to a uniformed officer to hang back. He bends to peer between bookcase shelves at the suspect, then approaches John, who's in a woolly hat and standing, poring over a book. Ronnie sidles up and stands beside him. Ronnie peruses a book. John looks up and Ronnie smiles.
All right. Matt, he's coming your way!
John knocks an officer into a book stand.
Just take it easy, John. Take it easy, mate.
Get away, bro!
Please, yeah. Stop!
John, listen. Hang on, John.
I can't hear you. I'm not listening.
Matt's jumped him.
John Smith, arresting you on suspicion of the murder of Stephen Marks, Kelly Scott and Linda Bowers, and the attempted murder of Joanne Ellis. You do not have to say anything, but may harm your defence if you do not mention when questioned, something which you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be used in evidence.
I'm off. Well done, son.
Matt's hobbling.
You limping?
No.
I am a captain in Jabin's army. I fought at the Kishon River. Okay?
Calm down.
It's got a system.
They drive wireless HD to work and they're still hungry.
He's having his blood pressure taken. Ronnie and James Steele are watching, then head out. In a corridor.
Worst thing is, after a while, it almost starts making sense.
Are we even sure about his name?
We're running his prints through the system.
Okay.
So, let's set up a video ID and get in the eyewitness.
Joanne's watching a video lineup on a monitor.
No.
John's unshaven face.
That's him.
Alicia.
Smith Lister wants him back on his drugs as soon as possible.
Fine, but we charge him with murder first.
So he's agreed to have us listed then?
Well, as far as we can tell.
We've got a match on the prints.
So why have we previously had the pleasure?
John Patrick Smith. One arrest for stalking a woman 16 months ago. The original charge was threats to kill, but the CPS reviewed the evidence and amended it to Section 2, simple harassment.
Aye.
He got a 12-month supervision order and paid 200 quid in costs.
Might as well give him a Mars bar and a pat on the head.
So what are the chances of nailing him this time, then?
James looks doubtful. Caption, Office of George Castle.
Well, do I resign now or do I wait till this hits the papers?
According to the file, the original charge was way over the top.
And the police didn't have the evidence to support harassment, fear of violence, let alone a threat to kill.
At the time, Smith had a job.
Doing what, for heaven's sake?
Marking legal exams for undergraduate exam boards.
God help us all.
His defence never referred to his mental state and the prosecution missed it.
My God, yeah. The Home Secretary's hyperventilating as it is. If the press find out that we had this guy and then we let him go...
Smith's solicitor's withdrawing from the case.
And so the madness begins.
He informed me that he no longer requires my services.
So who's representing him?
John Patrick Smith. MA from Oxford, Master of Laws from Cambridge, not to mention his PhD. And he did mention it several times.
You're not serious?
Oh, yes. The lunatic has officially taken over the asylum. And he knows his rights. As long as he's fit to stand trial, he's fit to represent himself.
I've seen him. He's not fit for anything. If he represents himself, this trial will be a farce.
Well, it's listed for mention, so you might want to bring it up with the judge.
Don't worry, I will.
Pre-trial review.
Mr. Steele, it is usually the defence who raise the issue of mental competence.
I know, but given the unusual circumstances...
Very well. Mr. Smith... It says here that you have a history of schizoaffective disorder.
That's correct, my lord. Since the age of 23. I'm prone to manic depression, paranoid delusions and hallucinations. Unless I'm taking my medication.
And are you currently taking your medication?
Yes, my lord, ever since my arrest.
And I understand you wish to represent yourself.
Yes, my lord. I have a first-class law degree from Oxford, as I believe to you, my lord. Also an LLM from Cambridge and a PhD in jurisprudence.
Without proper counsel, Mr. Smith will be at a distinct disadvantage. There's also a good chance he could suffer another psychotic break, in which case the trial would collapse. We'd be right back where we started.
But as Mr. Steele is aware, that's an irrelevance. Unless prosecution can establish incompetence at this precise moment, then the trial must go ahead.
In which case, subject to medical confirmation of the defendant's fitness to stand trial, we shall proceed.
There's one more thing, my lord. As Mr. Steele pointed out, I will be at a disadvantage. Perhaps to level the playing field, I might conduct my defense from counsel's row.
Mr. Steele?
I don't think it's at all appropriate, my lord. The defendant is already in custody.
I will allow it. As you say, Mr. Steele, these are unusual circumstances.
200-page application to dismiss. I don't know if we should prosecute him or offer him a job.
I don't understand. Why is he not going for this insanity plea?
He thinks he can prove we've got the wrong man.
Well, that's never going to work.
I wouldn't be so sure. He's challenging every piece of prosecution evidence.
The apprentice won't be in a rush to dismiss against a homicidal schizophrenic.
Yes, but he won't give you an inch either, and he won't be swayed by public opinion, however vitriolic. I'd be happier if you could only find something resembling a motive.
Well, according to Joe and Ellis's statement, he didn't give any sign he even knew who Linda was.
Talk to her again. And didn't Smith give his sister as his residential address?
Yeah.
I want to meet her.
Alicia heads out.
Remember, it's not just Smith in the dock over this one.
Radio.
TV.
Go easy on the makeup, George.
Caption, home of Joanne Ellis, Islington, N7.
There was lots of screaming. There might have been words.
Do you have any idea what those words could have been?
Something like, live forever. Maybe life forever.
What does it matter what he said? The man's a lunatic.
You'd have heard him in court last week. You might not be so sure.
It said in the paper he's got a law degree.
Yes, he has.
That way he got let off the first time? Because he was one of your own?
Absolutely not. It was nothing like that. The trouble was the prosecution just didn't know enough about him.
They knew he was stalking a woman. Didn't that give them some clue there was something wrong with him?
He grabs a glass of water Joanne's almost dropped.
Mr. Ellis, I can't imagine what you're going through. You and Joanne. I want you to know how sorry I am.
And that makes it all right, as long as you're sorry. You lot had him when you let him go. And now, my little girl...
He rests his hand on his daughter's leg, Joanne's arms in a sling.
Yeah, well, we've got ourselves a lawyer too. Us and the other families. And he's advised us to take a civil action against the police and the CPS. You let us down, Miss Phillips, and someone's going to pay.
James is with John's sister, Patricia.
When I talked to my brother last month, he didn't mention Linda Bowers. He called because he'd overheard someone plotting to kill our parents. Our parents died 3 years ago.
The woman he injured heard him shout the words, life forever?
She probably said the wife of Heber. It's from the Old Testament. She lured Cicero, an army captain, into her tent with food and then stabbed him through the temple.
Does this have a particular relevance for your brother?
Johnny went through a religious phase as a teenager. When he developed schizophrenia, he accused his girlfriend of putting needles in his brain. He called her the wife of Heber.
Was he ever violent towards his girlfriend?
He tried to strangle her in his room at Oxford. The next day, he was admitted to hospital for 6 months. So there's your motive.
I only wanted to find out about his behavior.
Oh, really? Because last time Johnny was arrested, I kept trying
to tell someone that he needed to be in hospital. That he needed supervision and support to help him stay on his medication.
But surely, given that history, there must have been some way to get him help.
What would you suggest? Have him locked up? Have him forcibly injected with antipsychotics? Unfortunately, the mentally ill have rights too, Mr. Steele.
I'm sorry.
It's just for 15 years I've known something like this was coming. And there was nothing I could do to stop it.
This is not about money. I won't pretend that a trial like this isn't expensive. Of course it is. But at the end of the day, you're faced with a choice between a public expenditure that is way out of control.
God, at the end of the day. Sound like the Scotland football manager.
Suit look good, though. What reaction from on high?
I have been summoned for a strategy discussion.
Good news is, Smith's application to dismiss has been denied. He's pleading not guilty by reason of insanity.
We couldn't have done that from the start. Okay, let's get this over with then. Accept the plea, establish the facts.
Then Prentice can issue a hospital order and put Smith back where he belongs.
Without criminal conviction, Smith can only be held as long as there's a mental health justification. Which means if he takes his medication, he could be out in a matter of weeks.
Smith knows that, George. Why else would he risk an insanity plea?
Because he's insane. Okay. And you really think he belongs in prison?
There has to be a trial, George.
Yes, but you'll never get a murder verdict, not now that he's going down this route.
I'm going to talk to him. If I get him to plead manslaughter, diminished responsibility, he'll get a definite sentence in a secure unit or hospital, and there'll be no chance of an early release just because he's managed to take his pills.
And if he won't change his plea? Okay, why am I even asking? Fine. Talk to him.
Caption: Legal Visits Room, Ashbridge Prison. James is with a clean-shaven John.
I'd be interested to know what you thought of my application, Mr. Steele.
I know, of course, it's a long shot.
Oh, Mr. Smith, I'm only here to discuss your plea.
Right, of course. You know, the one thing I regret about pleading insanity is that it means that there won't be a full trial. I'd have enjoyed the chance to really flex my legal muscles.
He smiles. James looks away.
Three people are dead, and a young girl has been left with horrific injuries. That doesn't bother you?
Well, obviously, I'm sorry for what happened, but you have to understand, that wasn't me. I'm not that creature. I won't take the blame for something that he did.
You honestly believe you should walk free?
I don't think I should be punished for something I didn't do, and I can hardly be rehabilitated when I have no memory of committing a crime. Assuming, of course, that you subscribe to the view that prison is an opportunity for rehabilitation.
I'm here because we're prepared to amend the indictment. We'll accept a plea of guilty to manslaughter due to diminished responsibility.
Is that a joke?
You'll be looking at 5 to 10 years in a secure unit or hospital as opposed to the 25 you'd get in prison for murder.
They'll never send me to prison. I've got a dozen expert witnesses, all of whom will confirm that I'm insane.
I wouldn't necessarily assume a jury will find you not guilty, John. You killed three people. Chances are they won't care why you did it. They'll just want to lock you up so you can't do it again.
And I feel that's an acceptable risk when weighed against my freedom.
Freedom to do what exactly, John? Look at how you've been living. If you plead guilty to manslaughter, diminished responsibility, you'll go somewhere where you can get help.
Do you know the kind of people who end up in mental institutions, Mr. Steele?
I am not one of them.
I don't belong there.
You have an illness, John.
Yes, but when I'm medicated, I'm just like you.
James has a look of realization.
I think you find that frightening. Perhaps you know how it feels, that urge to just let go and hell with the consequences.
There are always consequences.
Are there? I would have made a brilliant lawyer, Mr. Steele. I really would.
James gestures to a guard who opens the door.
Now I'll get to prove it.
He leans back in his chair as James heads off, giving John a look of contempt. A London street.
He's treating the whole thing like a game.
Well, what do we do? We can't counter his plea by claiming he was sane. According to the witnesses, he was climbing the wall.
Yeah, now there he is, calmly debating the merits of the penal system.
So he's a different person when he's medicated. That's hardly news. It's practically the basis of his defense.
Exactly. As long as he takes his pills, his mind works just fine. Which means when he decided to stop taking them, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, but it's not like he went out and got high, though. That's his natural state.
Well, I'm naturally bad-tempered. It doesn't mean I can punch you whenever you annoy me, which you're doing now, by the way.
I'd like to see you try. Anyway, we're talking about prosecuting for an omission. We wouldn't have a leg to stand on.
No, I'm saying he knew what would happen, and he did it anyway.
John's with Dr. Armitage.
Have you ever been on antipsychotic drugs, Dr. Armitage?
No, I haven't.
Well, I am using every ounce of energy that I have right now just trying to talk to you. It's like I'm pouring through a thick blanket. I feel stiff and half a step behind everybody.
I feel so tired just trying to hold on to reality. I don't know, I think letting go is almost a relief.
So he knows what he's like without medication?
Yeah, he willfully chose to stop taking it.
I know where you're going with this, James.
He created the circumstances that led to the murders. Letting go isn't just a relief for him. I think he actively enjoys it.
You can't punish someone for having a medical condition.
According to Smith, as long as he's on his medication, he's as sane as the next man.
Makes you worry about the next man. That's why the legal system can't deal with the mentally ill. You only work with absolutes.
He slaughtered three people.
Whilst in the grip of a terrifying and overwhelming delusion, you say he's shown no remorse. How can he? Convincing himself that Crazy John is a totally separate entity is the only way that he can cope.
He's playing the system, Roddy. He's an expert on legal insanity and he's using his condition to get away with murder.
If he pleads guilty, his whole coping mechanism will crumble. And where does he go from there?
Look, the way I see it, the longer he's locked up, the safer for everyone.
Sounds as if your expert witness may as well be working for the defense.
I can work around it.
Well, the Home Secretary feels very strongly that we should take the plea. He thinks it would be a PR disaster if Smith is found not guilty after a long, high-profile trial.
And what did you say?
I told him that it was entirely inappropriate for him to try to influence the prosecution of a High Court case.
Go, George.
Well, I am indeed the man, but we are not operating in a vacuum here, James. I've got mental health charities banging down the door saying that the system fails to identify vulnerable defendants, and this lot want to start a campaign for a national register for the mentally ill. If Smith does win in court, then the fallout could be horrendous in all directions.
He's not going to. He can play the victim all he likes. Even if a jury thinks that he was insane when he drew the bayonet, what about when he went out and stole it? Or when he decided to throw away his pills? He didn't just make one choice, George. A whole series of decisions led to those deaths. If Joanne Ellis has to live with the consequences, and so should Smith.
Caption: Crown versus Smith, trial day 2. Joanne's in the witness box.
I saw the manager and another woman on the floor bleeding. Then I heard a shout, and this man ran towards me. Something hit my head. I don't remember anything else.
Miss Ellis, can you describe the long-term effects of the head injury you sustained?
Glum-faced Joanne gazes down.
I've lost the sight in my right eye. I have limited muscle control on my left-hand side, particularly my left arm. I get very bad headaches, and I have problems with concentration and memory loss.
What did you do for a living before the incident?
I was a dancer with the Royal Ballet.
And will you be able to continue in that career at some point?
No.
Thank you. No further questions.
James sits and John in a suit and tie rises.
Miss Ellis, I'm very sorry that you were injured. When you first saw me, I didn't look like this, did I?
No.
Do you remember what I used to look like?
You were dirty, with longer hair. You were disgusting.
I look like somebody who should have been in a mental hospital.
Yes.
Like somebody who is clearly insane.
My lord.
Yes.
In fact, you're pursuing a civil action, aren't you, against the CPS for allowing someone so unmistakably insane to walk free?
Yes, I am.
So if you blame anyone, it's really the justice system that failed to protect you.
Oh, my lord, please.
He's right. You let him do this. You could have stopped him, but you let him go. And look what he did to me!
Judge Rivera looks at John.
That will do, Mr. Smith.
Frowning, John sits.
Miss Ellis, you may step down.
Joanne has her scarred face turned towards the judge. Dr. Armitage is in the witness box.
Antipsychotic drugs have powerful side effects. It's the most common reason patients stop taking them.
So, in the case of the defendant, he didn't stop because he thought he was cured?
I don't believe so.
So he was aware of the consequences?
He knows he's susceptible to paranoid delusions and that these delusions previously led him to try and strangle a girlfriend.
And do they explain why he was following Linda Bowers and why he ultimately killed her?
Yes. He believed she was plotting to kill him and that Joanne Ellis and the others were her accomplices.
So, just to be entirely clear, at the moment when the defendant stopped taking his medication, he knew that stopping would cause the return of these delusions that had previously led to violence.
Yes, he did.
Thank you, Dr. Armitage.
John rises from his seat.
Dr. Armitage, you described the side effects of my medication as powerful.
That's correct.
See, in your opinion, whilst experiencing these powerful side effects, would I have been able to accurately predict the likelihood of any future psychotic behavior?
No.
Thank you.
And will he be able to predict it in the future?
No.
Mr. Steele, you are not at liberty to fire questions at the witness whenever the mood takes you.
John sits and smooths his hair with the palm of his left hand, in a corridor outside the courtroom.
That pool girl was your best bet. Smith still got her to say that he wasn't to blame.
But did you see how Smith reacted when Roddy talked about next time?
Okay, so he's realised he's trapped in a cycle of behaviour. What good does that do us?
For Smith to admit his guilt, he needs to confront what he's done and accept that he might do it again. What we need is someone who's been through that cycle with him time after time.
Patricia's not going to help you put her brother away.
She knows him better than he knows himself.
Yeah, but she's still on his side.
Doesn't mean she's on his witness list.
In Patricia's office.
And with a manslaughter charge, he could still go to prison.
If he did, he'd be in a secure unit under medical supervision. But unless he changes his plea, he could be found guilty of murder.
That won't happen. I mean, they can see that he's sick.
If he's found not guilty, and he's back on his medication, they won't legally be able to hold him.
I don't believe this. I've spent nearly half my life dreading what Johnny might do, and then this happened. Now you're telling me it makes no difference, that nothing's changed.
I'm sorry.
I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry, I just can't.
Then break the pattern. Make the jury understand how badly John needs long-term care.
You're asking me to betray my brother?
No. I'm asking you to save him.
James is on his feet in the courtroom wearing his wig and gown.
Miss Smith, is this the first time your brother has stopped taking his medication?
No. Over the past 15 years, it's happened more than a dozen times.
How did you deal with this?
I begged him to keep taking his pills. I warned him that he might harm himself or other people if he stopped. But he just said other people would have to stay out of his way.
Did he ever offer an explanation for his behavior?
Yes. I found out he'd rented a flat in Ladbroke Grove on the 14th floor.
What did you do?
I went there. He was sitting on the living room floor.
He said he'd tried so hard to stay on his medicine so that he'd get a job as a lawyer or even a teacher, but that no one wanted him because he was sick. He said there was no point in taking his medicine. He said he'd rented the flat so that he'd be able to jump off the balcony. He needs somebody to make him take his medication. He's trying to convince you that he's in control, but he can't help himself. Somebody has to help him. Please.
She covers her face. John's in the witness box and rolls his eyes.
I understand you studied the Bible, Mr. Smith, the Old Testament in particular, is that right?
Yes, when I was younger, yeah.
And this was before you became ill, is that correct, Mr. Smith?
Yes.
And these details and these images, they stayed with you when you became ill. In fact, they became the basis of your delusions.
That's right, yeah.
So does it work the other way?
I don't understand.
Well, when you're on your medication as you are now, do you ever have any thoughts or memories from the times you've been delusional?
Not really, no.
Not really, no. So what, you remember some things?
Yeah, occasionally.
People's faces, perhaps?
Sometimes.
What about their voices? Do you hear voices, John, things they might have said?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Do you remember your sister, Patricia, coming to see you at Ladbroke Grove?
What?
At the flat when you were planning to kill yourself.
I was taking my medication then.
Oh, so you weren't delusional?
No,
at that
time.
What about Joanne Ellis? Do you remember seeing her face?
No.
Do you remember hearing her voice? She would have been screaming as you came towards her with the bayonet in your hand.
I don't remember.
What about when you pushed her to the ground or when you brought the bayonet down and you sliced it into her skull? No. Perhaps you thought she was a witness?
No,
was that it, that she would run away? Maybe you thought she would call the police?
No, it wasn't that.
Then what, John? What was it?
I thought that,
What? What did you think? Explain it to me.
I can't.
Explain it to me, John.
I thought that they wanted to kill me.
He gawps, his eyes filling with tears.
I thought that you all wanted me dead, so I had to stop you. I didn't care how.
And no further questions.
The judge puts down his pen. John stands crestfallen and open-mouthed in the witness box. James sits.
John Smith, you have pleaded guilty to the charge of manslaughter.
Yes.
Before sentencing, do you wish to say anything in mitigation?
John's standing holding a document. Counsel touches his elbow, encouraging him to speak.
Yes. I have suffered from schizoaffective disorder since the age of 23. I'm prone to manic depression, paranoid delusions, hallucinations. This paper's full of needles. They gave it to me to hurt me. It cuts and I bleed.
Mr. Smith?
I heard what Deborah said, and to Barak, the Lord will discomfort me, and... Well, looking at me. I made him do that badly. Look like a pony. Please don't do that. Otherwise, I'll have to leave.
Mr. Smith, sit down.
Wait. This isn't my armor. They took my armor. I absolutely can't wear this armor!
Mr. Smith, we shall take care of your armor once we are finished.
Now, please, sit down.
I'm sitting down. Sitting down.
James is in his office at his desk, surrounded by books and files. Alicia comes in and stands in the doorway.
Drink?
Sorry, I'll be working late. You know, they put John Smith on suicide watch.
Mm-hmm.
He sent me a copy of his closing speech.
Any good?
It's well-structured, persuasive. Pretty much what I'd have said if I'd been defending him.
So he really could have been a brilliant lawyer then?
Well, he certainly had potential.
She turns to go.
So you buy him then?
Caption: the events in this film are fictitious and any similarity between them and actual events is coincidental. ITFC audio description.